Chapter 32. Julian Plantation, Louisiana, May 1870. They left New Orleans in the middle of the night, rolling and clattering over dark, rutted roads in a wagon that Joshua York had purchased. Dressed in dark brown, a hooded cloak billowing behind him, Joshua looked as fine as in the old days as he snapped the reins and urged the horses onward. Abner Marsh sat grimly beside him, bouncing and jouncing as they rattled over rocks and holes, holding tight to the double-barreled shotgun across his knees. The pockets of his coat bulged with shells. Joshua pulled off the main road almost as soon as they were out of the city, and left the secondary road quickly as well, so they moved swiftly down pathways little travelled and deserted now in the dead of night. The roads became narrow, twisting lanes, through thick stands of yellow pine and heart pine, magnolia and cypress, sour gum and live oak. At times the trees twined together overhead, so it seemed as though they were plunging through a long black tunnel. Marsh found he was nearly blind at times when the trees pressed close and shut out the moon, but Joshua never let the pace slacken. He had eyes for the dark. At length the bayou appeared on their left, and the road ran along it for a long time. The moon shone pale and still on the black, quiet water. Fireflies were drifting through the lazy night, and Marsh listened to the deep croaking of bullfrogs and smelled the heavy, rich odours that drifted off the backwaters, where the water lilies grew thickly and the banks were dense with snow-white dogwoods and Daddy Greybeard beneath the old, towering trees. It might be the last night of his life, Abner Marsh thought. So he breathed it in deeply, snorted up all the smells it had to offer, the sweet ones and the sour ones alike. Joshua York looked straight ahead, and kept them thundering through the dark, oblivious and hard-faced, lost in his own thoughts. Near dawn, a vague light had just appeared in the east, and some of the stars seemed to be fading. They passed around an ancient Spanish oak, dead now, trailers of grey moss dripping feebly from its withered limbs, and into a wide, overgrown field. Marsh saw a row of shanties off in the distance, black as rotten teeth, and close at hand stood the charred and roofless walls of an old plantation house, its empty windows gaping at them. Joshua York brought them to a halt. "We will leave the wagon here and proceed on foot," he said. "It is not so far now." He looked up toward the horizon, where the brightness was spreading and eating up the stars. "At full light we will strike." Abner Marsh grunted assent, and climbed down off the wagon, clutching the shotgun tightly.
"Gonna be a nice day," he said to Joshua. "Maybe just a trifle gaudy."
York smiled and pulled his hat down over his eyes.
"This way," he said. "Remember the plan. I will smash in the door and confront Julian. When all his attention is fixed on me, step in and shoot for the face." "Hell," said Marsh. "I ain't gonna forget. I've been shooting at that face for years in my dreams."
Joshua walked quickly, with long strides, and Abner Marsh moved heavily beside him, struggling to match his pace. Marsh had left his cane back in New Orleans. This morning, of all mornings, he felt young again. The air was sweet and cool and full of fragrance, and he was going to get his lady back, his sweet steamer, his fever dream. Past the plantation house, past the slave shanties, through another field where indigo was growing wild in a profusion of pink and purple flowers. Around a tall old willow tree, whose trailing tendrils brushed Marsh's face as gently as a woman's hand. Then into a denser stand of woods, cypress mostly, and some palmetto, with flowering reeds and dogwood and fleur-de-lis of every colour growing all about. The ground was damp, and grew damper as they walked. Abner Marsh felt the wetness soaking through the soles of his old boots. Joshua ducked under a thick grey drape of Spanish moss that hung from a low, twisted limb, and Marsh did likewise, one step behind him. And there she was. Abner Marsh gripped the shotgun very tightly.
"Hell," was all he said.
The water had returned to the old back channel, and it stood all about the fevered dream, but it was not deep enough, and the steamer was not afloat. She rested on a shoal of mud and sand, her head thrust up into the air, listing about 10 degrees to larboard, her paddles high and mostly dry. Once she had been white and blue and silver. Now she was mostly grey, the grey of old rotting wood that has seen too much sun and too much dampness and not enough paint. It looked as if Julian and his goddamned vampires had sucked all the life out of it. On her wheelhouse, Marsh could see traces of the whore's scarlet that Sour Billy had slapped upon her, and the letters O-Z, real faint, like old memories. But the rest was gone, and the old true name could be seen again, where the newer paint had crumbled and peeled. The whitewash on her railings and colonnades had fared the worst, and that was where she was greyest, and here and there Marsh saw patches of green clinging to her wood and spreading. He began to tremble as he looked at her. The damp and the heat and the rot, he thought, and there was something in his eye. He rubbed at it angrily. Her chimneys looked crooked because of the way she was listing. Spanish moss festooned one side of her pilot house and drooped off her verge flagpole. The ropes that held up her larboard stage had snapped long ago, and the stage had come crashing to the forecastle. Her grand staircase, that great curving expanse of polished wood, was slimy with fungus. Here and there Marsh could see wildflowers that had taken root in cracks between the deck boards.
"God damn it," he said. "God damn it, Joshua! How the hell could you let her get like this? How the hell could you—"
But then his voice cracked and betrayed him, and Abner Marsh found he had no words. Joshua York put a gentle hand on his shoulder and said, "I'm sorry, Abner. I did try."
"Oh, I know," Marsh swore. "It was him that did it to her, that turned her rotten like everything else he touches. Oh, I know who it was. I sure as hell know that. What I don't know is why the hell you lied to me, Mr. York. All that business about the Natchez and the Robert E. Lee. Hell, she ain't gonna outrun nobody. She ain't never gonna move again."
His face was beet red, he knew, and his voice was starting to get loud.
"God damn it all the hell, she's just gonna sit and rot. God damn it, and you knew it!"
He stopped suddenly, before he started to shout and woke up all the damned vampires. "I knew it," Joshua York admitted, with sorrow in his eyes. The morning sun shone behind him and made him look pale and weak. "But I needed you, Abner. It was not all lie. Julian did put forth the plan I told you, but Billy told him what bad shape the fever dream was in, and he gave it up at once. The rest was all true."
"How the hell can I believe you?" Marsh said flatly. "After all we've been through, you lied to me. God damn you to hell, Joshua York, you're my own goddamn partner, and you lied to me."
"Abner, listen to me. Please, let me explain." He put up a hand against his brow and blinked.
"Go on," said Marsh. "Go on and tell me. I'm listening, damn you."
"I needed you. I knew there was no way I could conquer Julian alone. The others, even those who are with me, they cannot stand before him, before those eyes. He can make them do anything. You were my only hope, Abner. You and the men I thought you would bring with you. It has a painful irony. We of the night have preyed upon the people of the day for uncounted thousands of years, and now I must turn to you to save our race. Julian will destroy us. Abner, your dream may have rotted through, but mine can still live. I helped you once. You could not have built her without me. Help me now."
"You should have just asked me," Marsh said. "You could have told me the goddamn truth."
"I did not know if you would come to save my people. I knew you would come for her."
"I would have come for you, damn it. We're partners, ain't we? Well, ain't we?"
Joshua York regarded him with quiet gravity. "Yes," he said. Marsh glared up at the grey, rotten ruin that had been his proud lady, and saw that a goddamned bird had built a nest in one of her stacks. Other birds were stirring and fluttering from tree to tree, making little birdie sounds that vexed Abner Marsh no end. The morning sunlight fell upon the steamer in bright yellow shafts, slanting through the trees and swimming with dust motes. The last shadows were stealing away from the dawn into the underbrush.
"Why the hell now?" Marsh asked, frowning at York again. "If it wasn't the Natchez and the Robert E. Lee, what was it? What makes today different from the last 13 years that all of a sudden you're running off and writing me letters?"
"Cynthia is with child," said Joshua.
"My child."
Abner Marsh remembered the things York had told him so long ago.
"You killed somebody together?"
"No. For the first time in our history, conception was free of the taint of the Red Thirst. Cynthia has been using my drink for years. She became sexually receptive, even without the blood, the fever.
I responded. It was powerful, Abner, as strong as the thirst, but different, cleaner, a thirst for life instead of death. She will die when her time comes, unless your people can help. Julian would never permit that. And there is the child to think of. I do not want it corrupted, enslaved by Damon Julian. I want this birth to be a new beginning for my race. I had to take action. A goddamned vampire baby, Abner Marsh thought. He was going to go in and face Damon Julian for a child that might grow up to be just like Julian was. But maybe not. Maybe it'd grow into Joshua instead.
"If you want to do something," Marsh said, "then why the hell ain't we in there instead of yapping out here?"
He jerked his shotgun in the direction of the huge ruined steamer. Joshua York smiled. "I am sorry for the lie," he said.
"Abner, there is no one like you. You have my thanks." "Never mind about that now," Marsh said gruffly, embarrassed by Joshua's gratitude.
He walked out from under the shadows of the trees toward the fever dream and the rotted, purple-stained indigo tanks that loomed behind her. When he got down near the water, the mud grabbed at his boots and made obscene sucking sounds as he pulled them free. Marsh checked again to make sure the gun was loaded. Then he found an old weathered plank lying in the shallow, still water, leaned it up against the side of her hull, and hefted himself up onto the main deck of the steamboat. Joshua York, moving quickly and silently, came behind him. The grand staircase confronted them, leading up to the darkness of the boiler deck, to the curtained staterooms where their enemies slept, to the long, echoing dimness of the saloon. Marsh did not move immediately.
"I want to see my steamer," he said at last,
and he walked around the stair into the engine room. Seams had burst on a couple of the boilers. Rust had eaten through the steam pipes. The great engines were brown and flaking in spots. Marsh had to step warily to make sure his foot didn't crash through a rotten floorboard. He went to a furnace. Inside was old, cold ash, and something else, something brown and yellow and blackened here and there. He reached in and came out with a bone.
"Bones in her furnace," he said. "Her deck rotted through. Goddamned slave manacles still on the floor. Rust. Hell. Hell!" He turned. "I seen enough."
"I told you," said Joshua York.
"I wanted to see her."
They walked back out into the sunlight of the forecastle. Marsh glanced back over his shoulder at the shadows, the rotten, rusted shadows of all that she had been and all that he had dreamed.
18 big boilers," he said hoarsely. "Why'd he love them engines?"
"Abner, come. We must do what we came to do." They ascended the grand staircase, climbing with care. The slime on the steps was foul-smelling and slippery. Marsh leaned too hard on a carved wooden acorn, and it came off in his hand. The promenade was grey and deserted and looked unsafe. They entered the main cabin, and Marsh frowned at 300 feet of decay and despair and beauty gone to rot. The carpet was stained and torn and eaten away by fungus and mould. Green splotches spread across it like cancer eating away at the soul of the steamer. Someone had painted over the skylight, had covered all that fine stained glass with black paint. It was dark. The long marble bar was covered with dust. Stateroom doors hung broken and shattered. One chandelier had fallen. They walked around the pile of broken glass. A third of the mirrors were cracked or missing. The rest had gone blind, their silver flaking away or turning black. When they walked up to the hurricane deck, Marsh was glad to see the sun. He checked the gun again. The Texas loomed above them, its cabin doors closed and waiting.
"He's still in the captain's cabin?" Marsh asked.
Joshua nodded. They climbed the short flight of steps to the Texas deck and moved toward it. In the shadows of the Texas porch, Sour Billy Tipton was waiting. But for the eyes, Abner Marsh might never have recognized him. Sour Billy was as ruined as the boat. He had always been skinny. Now he was an animated skeleton, sharp bones thrusting against sickly yellow flesh. His skin had the look of a man's who has been bedridden for years. His face was a damned skull, a yellowish, pockmarked skull. Nearly all his hair had fallen out, and the top of his head was covered with scabs and raw red blotches. He was dressed in black rags, and his fingernails had grown 4 inches long. Only his eyes were the same, ice-coloured and somehow feverish eyes, staring, trying to scare, trying to be little vampire eyes, just like Julian's. Sour Billy had known they were coming. He must have heard them. When they turned the corner, he was there, his knife in his hand, his deadly, practiced hand. He said, "Well," Abner Marsh snapped up the shotgun and fired both barrels, point blank, at his chest. Marsh didn't care much to hear that second "well." Not this time. The gun roared and kicked back hard, slamming into Marsh and bruising his arm. Sour Billy's chest turned red in 100 places, and the blast threw him backward. The rotten railing of the Texas porch gave way behind him, and he went crashing down to the hurricane deck. Still holding his knife, he tried to get to his feet. He reeled and staggered forward dizzily like a drunk. Marsh jumped down to the hurricane deck after him and reloaded the gun. Sour Billy grabbed for a pistol stuck through his belt. Marsh gave him 2 more barrels and blew him clear off the hurricane deck. The pistol spun from his grip, and Abner Marsh heard Billy scream and smash into something on the way down. He peered down at the forecastle. Billy was lying face down, twisted at an unnatural angle, a smear of red beneath him. He still had a hold of his goddamn knife, but it didn't look like he'd be doing any damage with it. Abner Marsh grunted, pulled a couple of fresh shells from his pocket, and turned back towards the Texas. The door to the captain's cabin stood wide open, and Damon Julian was out on the Texas porch facing Joshua, a pale malevolence with black and beckoning eyes. Joshua York stood immobile, like a man entranced. Marsh wrenched his eyes down to his shotgun and the shells he held in his hand.
"Pretend he ain't there," he told himself. "You're in the sun. He can't come for you. Don't look at him. Just load. Just load the gun and give him both goddamn barrels right in the face while Joshua holds him still."
His hand shook. He steadied it and slid in one shell. And Damon Julian laughed. At the sound of that laughter, Marsh looked up in spite of himself, the second shell still between his fingers. Julian had such music in his laugh, such warmth and good humour, that it was hard to be afraid, hard to remember what he was and the things he could do. Joshua had fallen to his knees. Marsh cussed and took 3 impetuous strides forward, and Julian whirled, still smiling, and came at him, or tried to. Julian vaulted down to the hurricane deck over the ruined porch, but Joshua saw him, rose and came leaping after, catching Julian from behind. For a moment they grappled on the deck. Then Marsh heard Joshua cry out in pain, and he looked away and slid the second shell home and closed the gun and looked up again and saw Julian coming, that white face looming up before him and the teeth gleaming, the terrible teeth. His finger tightened convulsively on the trigger before he had the damned gun aimed, and the shot went wild. The recoil sent Marsh sprawling, and that was probably what saved his life. Julian missed him, spun, and hesitated when he saw Joshua rising, 4 long bleeding tracks down his right cheek.
"Look at me, Julian," Joshua called softly. "Look at me."
Marsh had 1 shot left. Sprawled on the deck, he raised the shotgun, but he was too slow. Damon Julian tore his eyes away from Joshua and saw the barrel swinging towards him. He whirled and the shot boomed through empty air. By the time Joshua York had helped Abner Marsh to his feet, Julian had vanished down the stairs. "Go after him," Joshua said urgently, "and stay alert. He might be waiting for you."
"What about you?"
"I'll see he doesn't leave the boat," Joshua said. Then he spun and leaped from the edge of the hurricane deck out over the forecastle, quick and nimble as a cat. He landed a yard from where Sour Billy lay, landed hard and rolled. An instant later he was back up and darting up the grand staircase. Marsh took out 2 more shells and reloaded. Then he went to the stair, peered down it warily, and began to descend step by careful step, the shotgun held at the ready. The wood creaked beneath his tread, but there was no other sound. Marsh knew that meant nothing. They moved so silently, all of them. He had a hunch he knew where Julian would hide. In the grand saloon or one of the staterooms off it. Marsh kept his trigger finger tensed and went on in, pausing to let his eyes adjust to the darkness. Way at the far end of the cabin, something moved. Marsh aimed and froze, then eased off. It was Joshua. "He hasn't come out," Joshua called, his head moving as his eyes, so much better than Marsh's, raked the cabin.
"I figured he hadn't," Marsh said.
All of a sudden it felt cold in the cabin, cold and still like the breath from a long closed tomb. It was too dark. Marsh couldn't see anything but vaguely menacing shadows.
"I need some goddamn light," he said.
He jerked the shotgun upward and fired 1 barrel up at the skylight.
The report echoed deafeningly in the enclosed cabin, and the glass disintegrated. Shards and sunlight came raining down. Marsh took out a shell to reload.
"I don't see nothing," he said, stepping forward with the gun under his arm.
The long cabin was utterly still and empty as far as he could see. Maybe Julian was crouched behind the bar, Marsh thought. Cautiously, he moved toward it. A vague tinkling sound touched his ears, the clatter of crystals clinking together in the wind. Abner Marsh frowned, and Joshua cried,
"Abner, above you!"
Marsh looked up just as Damon Julian released his hold on the great swaying chandelier and came plunging down at him. Marsh tried to raise and aim his shotgun, but it was too late and he was too damned slow. Julian landed right on top of him and sent the gun spinning from Marsh's grasp, and both of them went down. Marsh tried to roll free. Something grabbed him, pulled. He smashed out blindly with a huge, rough fist. The answering blow came out of nowhere and nearly tore his head off. For a moment he lay stunned. His arm was seized and wrenched roughly behind him. Marsh screamed. The pressure did not let up. He tried to push himself to his feet, and his arm was bent upward with awful force. He had it snap, and he screamed again, louder as the pain hammered through him. He was pushed roughly to the deck, his face hard against the mouldy carpeting.
"Struggle, my dear captain, and I'll break your other arm," Julian's mellow voice told him. "Remain still."
"Get away from him," Joshua said. Marsh lifted his eyes and saw him standing 20 feet away.
"I hardly think so," Julian replied. "Do not move, dear Joshua. If you come at me, I will tear out Captain Marsh's throat before you are within 5 feet. Stay where you are, and I will spare him. Do you understand?"
Marsh tried to move and bit his lip in anguish. Joshua stood his ground, hands poised like claws in front of him.
"Yes," he said, "I understand."
His grey eyes looked deadly but uncertain. Marsh looked around for the shotgun. It lay 5 feet away, well beyond his reach.
"Good," said Damon Julian. "Now why don't we make ourselves comfortable?"
Marsh heard Julian pull over a chair. He seated himself just behind Marsh.
"I'll sit here in the shadows. You can take a seat beneath that shaft of sunlight the captain so obligingly let into the saloon. Go on, Joshua. Do as I say unless you want to see him die. If you kill him, there will be nothing between us," Joshua said. "Perhaps I'm willing to take that risk," Julian replied. "Are you?"
Joshua York looked around slowly, frowned, took up a chair and moved it beneath the shattered skylight. He seated himself in the sun, a good 15 feet away from them.
"Take off your hat, Joshua. I want to see your face."
York grimaced, removed his wide-brimmed hat, and sent it sailing off into the shadows.
"Fine," said Damon Julian. "Now we can wait together. For a while, Joshua."
He laughed lightly.
"Until dark."